First names are great, yeah. Lauren, thanks for having us. Yeah, absolutely. So this was a three-armed study. It was a global study, although I think it's important to note that it was an ex-US study. So the three arms, there was arm A, which was the control arm of trastuzumab and doublet chemotherapy. And that was one of the reasons that it wasn't included in the US because pembrolizumab was already approved in the US. And so it was included in other countries in North America, but everywhere else in the world. And then arm B was zanidatamab plus doublet chemotherapy. And arm C was the triplet, but really four drugs, of course, doublet chemotherapy with zanidatamab and the PD-1 inhibitor tislelizumab. And just to speak for a moment on the statistical design, because it was powered to compare arm C to arm A and arm B to arm A, but arm C and arm B, which of course we're all interested in, was not powered for that direct comparison. Yeah, so, and I want to even take a moment to just kind of talk about the differences between zanidatamab at a functional and mechanistic level, because I think that will ultimately play out to some of the findings that we saw. So it's a zani's a biparatopic antibody, so it's bispecific to two epitopes on the HER2 domain, extracellular domain 2 and domain 4. So the binding of trastuzumab and pertuzumab, which I'm sure a lot of folks outside of GI are familiar with, and especially in the breast space. And so this binding is in trans, which really leads to a reconfiguration and the formation of these HER2 receptors. And so that has a number of downstream effects. So it certainly has comparable antibody-dependent cellular cytotoxicity and phagocytosis that's comparable to trastuzumab, but there's increased intracellular internalization and an increase in complement-mediated cytotoxicity. There's a really nice Nature Communications paper that does a much better job explaining this than I do, but that's some of the mechanistic rationale for why it's thought this drug might be work better than trastuzumab. And so what we did in fact see, the results of the HERIZON study that were presented at ASCO GI, is that both arms B and arm C led to a superior progression-free survival compared to the control arm. And arm C, the immunotherapy-containing arm, had an improvement in overall survival compared to the control. Arm B is, overall survival. This was the first interim analysis, so it's still not the final analysis, and it at this point just missed the overall survival cutoff. Yeah, absolutely. And I think you highlight a really important thing. This is not a bispecific with the goal of geography, right? Bringing the T cell, the T cell engagers, bringing the immune cells closer. This is with the goal of enhancing specificity and, receptor saturation. And so the main side effects, there are infusion reactions, but they're, very similarly managed to infusion reactions that you have with trastuzumab. There were slightly more. I think in the trial it was about 4% up from 2%, so still not something that would ultimately lead to discontinuation and something you'd manage similar to how you manage infusion related reaction from trastuzumab. The main side effect was really diarrhea, as you and Sunny mentioned, and for all patients it occurred about 3 out of 4, 75 to 80% of patients. It very similar in arms B and C, compared to about 50% in the trastuzumab arm. And as you mentioned, dropping the bolus, and that's something I similarly do for my patients with advanced disease, just the infusional 5-FU. And they did institute diarrhea prophylaxis. So that included loperamide for the first 7 days. And what they saw really was that this was a symptom that was early in the treatment course, so usually the onset was within the first week, and then it also dissipated. So it was something that really, for the most part, improved within the first few weeks. So I think it's really important to kind of, Rohit, as you mentioned, sharing with our patients the expectation to coach them through. This is time limited. We can get you through this period, because there is a really profound benefit with this drug. And so, proactive is better than being reactive. Imodium, adding in Lamotil on top of that is needed to try and get patients through that first month or so. Yeah, it's a great question. I would say even before thinking about what the next line of therapy is, I think when patients, especially with HER2 positive disease, develop progression of their disease, as much as I'm able to and is, safe and feasible to do so, I try and get a biopsy specifically of a progressing lesion. So sometimes patients will have, The endoscopy and the fact that most patients have their primary tumor in place makes that a relatively easy place to biopsy. But if they have regression in their primary tumor and they have a progressing liver lesion or lung lesion, then I do try and go for that if the patient is amenable. The other alternative that I've been incorporating into my practice is getting blood-based, molecular profiling, which if it's positive and detectable, and especially if it's something I have at baseline, and there is still an ERBB2 amplification, then that can instill some confidence that their cancer is progressing, not based on a loss, because we do know that obviously from data from trastuzumab and not so much from zanidatamab, but that about half of patients who develop progression do so because of loss of HER2 positivity. And so another HER2 targeting agent, when the cancer is growing because it has no longer addicted to that oncogenic driver, is not going to be as effective. But presuming that the tumor has retained HER2 positivity, then trastuzumab deruxtecan would be my second line choice, exactly as you mentioned, based on the DESTINY-Gastric04 trial, which was presented at the last ASCO. I mean, it's a targeted agent, but it is chemotherapy. And so I come to it with the mind of similarly, how would I dose chemotherapy in the patient that I'm treating, right? It's a second line setting, so these patients have received chemotherapy before, and their performance status is, a wide range. We know either, I don't remember if it's nationally or globally, but more than half of patients don't even get to second line treatment in this disease. So we have a lot of work to do, and part of that is just because when it progresses, it can become so aggressive. So while 6.4 is the preferred dosing, don't want to let perfect be the enemy of good, or however exactly the saying goes. And if it's something that I'm worried their blood counts or their fatigue or performance status or LFTs can't tolerate the full 6.4 dose, then I start at a dose level -1. But kind of keeping that in mind, that even though it's targeted, it is still chemotherapy. Yeah, I mean, exactly as Sonny mentioned, the majority of us have not used this. It's approved for biliary tract cancer, but that's rare. And the phase two study was very few, a small number of patients. So most of us don't have experience with this drug, but we didn't have experience with zolbetuximab before that, was a new drug that's now approved. So we will learn, and we'll be proactive about the side effects, but the benefit I think is quite clear. Thank you for having us. No, yeah, this is great. Happy to come back. Yeah. Well, likewise. Great. Thank you. Have a good one.